This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Here we go again then. Hello everybody, welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as we look ahead to a new season in which we'll welcome 20 new managers. We'll welcome back 5 former Football League clubs, and we'll have a rather strange start to the winter when, for the first time mid-campaign, the Sky Bet Championship will take a breather for a month for the World Cup. Our special guest has been at the heart of one of this summer's biggest stories.
As soon as this man got involved, it was done, basically, you know, in terms of the 2 weeks, which were probably the longest 2 weeks of people's lives, thinking, is it actually going to happen? But in contrast with what we've been through as a football club, it was relatively short, and I'm really glad he's got the club.
And while we've got him, we'll ask him to cast his eye over a few of the runners and riders across the EFL's 3 divisions. Back again for another series. It's the official EFL podcast. And to take us through his own past 12-plus months, and I'm sure share his sense of relief at his current club's summer rescue from administration, the now 37-year-old former Luton Town, West Brom, Aston Villa, Leicester City, Birmingham City, Hull City, and still Derby County defender Curtis Davis, who in the aftermath of David Clough's takeover at Pride Park a month ago, has, much to the relief of his club supporters, signed a new 1-year contract. I can see you, and I'm looking at you. Mind you, you didn't show the signs of pressure and stress when the whole administration thing was going on, but I am guessing you feel completely different in yourself right now.
Yeah, I think when the administration, everything was going on, we were in the building, we were playing football, so we had the distraction. I think during the summer, when you're out of the building, you're wondering whether a takeover is going to happen. It doesn't happen, and you're waiting to sign a new contract. I think that's when the panic alarm kind of rings in your head. I did manage to stay calm quite a bit, and more so than I thought I would. But I think when you're in the building, you kind of have that comfortability of everyone else around you is in the same situation. Whereas at home, you know, I'm sat here, I'm waiting for news. I'm scrolling through social media trying to find some news, because obviously getting answers was very difficult. And then from there, you know, you're kind of banging your head against the wall. So I end up having to go like many people do, but I went away on holiday because I didn't want to just be in this country, just sitting here waiting for news. So I just went away with my family for 10 days to kind of clear my head and to be away from it. And then when there was news, hopefully I'd hear, and David Clough come in and saved us.
I thought you were on the verge of telling us where you went on holiday. Come on, where'd you go?
I went to Turkey. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you decompress? Did your phone switched off, or are you one of those people who sits on your sunbed sort of staring at your phone all day long?
No, I don't know. I'm just in and out of the pool with my middle daughter. She's lively. She just learned how to swim properly. So literally it was just spotting her around the pool, basically. So yeah, it was good. It was fun. You know, I'm not one of those that's glued to my phone. I obviously was still checking social media to see whether or not anything had happened with Derby County. But yeah, I think the big thing I did over there was it was an all-inclusive. So I think I might have overindulged a little bit. And maybe at my age, it wasn't the right decision.
That's risky, because as much as it is there for you to have as much or as little as you want, we like to feel we're getting a value out of an all-inclusive, don't we? You know, if there's an extra meal provided mid-morning and mid-afternoon, even though we don't need it, we feel we have to have it just simply because there it is, well, quite literally on a plate. Can you just stand up a bit? Because you look amazingly ripped for a 37-year-old. Can I have a little look? Oh, yeah. Look at you. Eh? Yeah, he's doing the muscle ads. Listen, some serious questions. I mean, I guess there were a couple of moments of relief for you then. Yes, the obvious selfish one, which was when the ink was dry on the 1-year contract extension, but you've become part of the furniture at Derby, haven't you? You've nailed your colours to the mast. It's now the club you've played at for longer than any other, played more games for than any other over the course of your career. So that bond is extraordinarily strong. I'm trying to imagine how it felt when you did find out that, for real, a new owner was in place and had pulled all the different elements together.
Well, as soon as this man got involved, it was done, basically, you know, in terms of the 2 weeks, were probably the longest 2 weeks of people's lives thinking, is it actually going to happen? But in contrast with what we've been through as a football club, it was relatively short, and I'm really glad he's got the club.
You painted a picture of the sort of synergy between you guys as players and that uncertainty and the supporters and, as you say, wider staff. What? How do you pronounce his name? Because I said Klaus, you saying Klaus.
I say Klaus.
Okay. I'm guessing you've met him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And he's going to help the club move forward, hopefully in a balanced way rather than aiming for the star straight away.
And I guess one of the obvious markers is when I look at the list of players that have started to come in, Conor Hourihan, James Chester, David McGoldrick, Corey Smith, James Collins. I mean, that was fairly rapid as well, wasn't it?
So in terms of the players, the coaching staff, in terms of the manager, Liam, Justin, and then with along with Pete Shuttleworth, one of the analysts, had been putting together this portfolio of players that they were going to try and approach that were out of contract, because we knew the budget was going to be tight. So in terms of free contracts and things like that, experienced players to try and get some more experience in. Obviously, we had a lot of young players last year. And they put this list together. How many of them would come? They didn't know, but they put it all together. Obviously, when the first takeover fell apart, a few off of that list that haven't signed have gone elsewhere. And then from the rest, we managed to get a lot of them over the line because, you know, the takeover happened and we managed to get them over the line. I think the reason a lot of them have come is, you know, Derby County is a great football club. It's a great project. But like me, a lot of them are a bit older, can be a bit more selective in their decisions because of the careers they've had. And being Midlands-based, it's actually helped us, you know, because, you know, a few of the lads live in Birmingham. You know, James Collins' family are in Coventry. James Chester's in Warrington, so he's able to at least stay in Derby twice a week and things like that. You know, there's ways that Liam's been able to get the people in.
Still feels weird. I mean, believe it or not, I do some preparation and have some notes when I do these episodes of the Official EFL podcast. And I've got to be honest with you, as we were chatting there, I reached for my championship notes and then went, oh, no, of course, no. All my Derby notes are on League One now. I mean, if we look back through history, and I'm talking decades and decades of Middlesbrough and Sunderland and more recently Leicester, this division can be brilliant for rebirth. It can be nobody, you know, I'm sure Derby County fans do not want to be in the third tier, but they'll be in for some spectacular away days. You can really get momentum going to send a club moving in the right direction in this division. Are you very conscious of that, of trying to hit the ground running, of give them a bit of payback for what they've been through over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think I'm very conscious of that, because the support that we had from the fans last year, particularly in the most difficult of seasons, you know, it's one thing to say it wasn't our fault, off of the pitch, everything happened and all that. But, you know, there were some games we were poor and we lost games, but they still would clap us off the pitch. It's almost embarrassing sometimes being clapped off the pitch, you know, talking about a Middlesbrough game, we lost 4-1 away and they clapped us off the pitch. You know, sometimes it became a little bit embarrassing, like, you know, I don't mind you jeering us, I don't mind you booing us, because you need that kind of level of, we're going to get that, have problems if we don't win games, you know. Whereas this year, it's a different ball game. As much as, you know, there's a lot of positivity around the club, everyone's excited, everyone's happy to be back at Pride Park, have their club, there's an expectation to go and win games, particularly with the signings we've made. Mm-hmm. So, as much as, you know, the positivity will be there and they will back us, of course, I know what they're like. If we're losing games and we're not climbing the table, you know, it comes with pressure. So we do owe them a hopefully a good start. I think in this league anyway, I've played at this league before with Luton Town, and I remember the start we had. We won 9 of the first 10 and drew the other, and we never looked back. So I think if you can get some momentum at the start of this league and get going, I think, you know, you might be hard to catch. I think even you look at Forest Green last year as an example in League Two, you know, the level that they had in terms of, they went flying out of the blocks. They even had a massive stumble of about 10, 12 games where they kind of failed to win and they still went up. So it is a league where momentum is everything if you start well, and then it hopefully gives you a bit of extra cushion if you do have a little bit of a wobble.
Curtis, in a perverse sort of way, has all of this given you a few more years? Are you as fresh as you have been for any close season? Are you as excited as you have been for any close season as a result of the misfortune that you've found yourself part of?
I think it was the most excited I was going back to a pre-season.
Seriously? Seriously? Yeah. How many pre-seasons now do you think? What season will this be?
So, number 22. Yeah. So, obviously... Yes.
22 seasons.
Yeah. More pre-seasons than some of the lads' age. So, yeah, that's something I always like to bring up in the dressing room. But, yeah, it's, you know, I'm still... And if anything, you kind of appreciate them more now because, you know, I don't know how many more I'm going to have. So I try to appreciate it. I try to put the work in. I try to work as hard as I can. And I know that having played every minute of last season, there's a big, you know, target for me to do that again, you know, for myself. And would it be possible? I'm not sure. But I have to put the work in first and foremost to make sure that I'm in a position that, you know, I give myself the best chance to. And if I just turn up as the older, more senior player and think I can cruise through pre-season and I'll be all right, I'll just look after myself, that's not the case. I'm kind of the person that attacks things head on, gets the money in the bank, you know, in the fitness, and then touch with it, helps me through the season.
You've kindly agreed to chat to us in a wider sense, and a couple of bits just before we whip through the divisions. No Skybet Championship this year between the 12th of November and the 10th of December with the World Cup. It's it feels, I don't know if it does to you, but it's kind of the pennies dropping now that we're going to have this big gap in the middle of the season and this sort of winter World Cup. Is it weird from your point of view to be looking in on it like that?
It is strange. Obviously, it's the middle of a season to... Obviously, we've never, with the African nations, say, you know, clubs, individual clubs will lose certain players for the month, things like that. But for a whole league to be stopped, it's crazy. It's not anything I thought I'd ever see. Obviously, it makes more sense that it be in the winter than the summer. Obviously, those players, we had obviously 36, 37 degree heat Monday and Tuesday of last week, and we thought that was bad. But imagine being in Doha. In stadium, pitch level, trying to play an elite game of football. It probably was the right decision, but it's just the backlog of games. You know, when Premier League teams are complaining about how many games they need to play and they need to squeeze in this, need to squeeze in that, with alongside Champions League and stuff like that. Well, Championship teams are going to have to play 46 games when missing a month of football. So it literally... I can imagine it's going to be Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. And those teams that progress further in the FA Cup or in the Carabao Cup are going to literally be playing every few days. So obviously, you know, that will come with success, I guess, because you'd be doing well if you're doing that. But it's going to be so difficult. And the month off, people say it's a bit like a reboot and a restart. You know, it's like a mid-season break that you can... relax the legs. But I think if you're a team going into that, which would usually be the Christmas period, with momentum, and then you lose that, it becomes very difficult. So it's a difficult one to look at, really.
It's an extra dynamic, isn't it, that certainly supporters need to be aware of, but also managers as well, in terms of how they are controlling their resources. The other thing I want to talk to you about was the FA, the Premier League and the EFL have this week introduced new measures and stronger sanctions to tackle the increase in antisocial behaviour, criminal behaviour recently seen at football grounds. They're going to target activities such as entering the pitch without permission, carrying or using smoke bombs or pyrotechnics and throwing objects, as well as drug use and discriminatory behaviour. And they've been pretty clear as well in saying that all identified offenders will be reported by clubs to the police. Prosecution could result in a permanent criminal record, which may affect employment and education going forward and could result in a prison sentence. And governing bodies have also said they are engaging with broadcasters to ask for their support in ensuring that pitch invasions, pyrotechnics, etc., don't become normalized in the game. As a senior pro, how concerned were you at the end of last season where you saw some of the scenes, of which obviously the hideous attack on Billy Sharp was the one that really came into public consciousness? How necessary are these measures from the key stakeholders in the game?
Listen, when a club stays up on the last day of the season, or a club gets promoted on the last day of the season, you understand the ecstasy, and fans might run on the pitch. And, you know, it's always the herd method, isn't it? It's once one goes, oh, I'll go. And people start jumping over because they think they can and they'll get away with it. Mm. So that's kind of what it was. The thing I'd say with last season is it seemed a lot of teams were just doing it for the sake of it. You know, it seemed more than ever, people just running on the pitch thinking they can do what they want. That was crazy. In terms of, you know, the Billy Sharp thing, this is where it becomes difficult, because usually you're told, you know, if a streaker runs onto the pitch, you're told to stay away from them, and you're told to not approach them or anything like that. Now, when there are 1,000 people on the pitch, you're going to fear for your safety. So you've got the Billy Sharp thing where someone literally runs, forearm smashes him and smashes his jaw, whatever they did. So I believe these situations are definitely right to be put in place, because if I know that I'm protected in terms of this person's going to be arrested after this, but when this person maybe has nothing to lose, they'll think they'll be able to run on the pitch, punch me and then run into the crowd. You know, it's a bit of a dangerous situation. So I just think, whilst it's not a case of, you know, self-defense in terms of every single person that runs on the pitch is going to necessarily want to hurt you, it's still, you know, an awkward situation for a player, because, you know, players will end up with bans and stuff like that for pushing fans or for doing things to people that shouldn't be on the pitch. And it shouldn't be about that. It should just be about people knowing their role, their supporters, we're the players. We're on the pitch playing the game. You're in the stands admiring and enjoying it. Once it comes to the fact that you're on the pitch, it's a totally different situation. So I think hopefully, like I say, the pitch invasions will stop. I think the pyrotechnics, I'd like to know who does these searches, because, you know, you can't get a bottle cap onto a pitch side sometimes and stuff like that, but yet people are able to get flares into the ground. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So I think that's a big one for me, that the pyrotechnics, because, you know, ultimately they're dangerous. You know, if the one were to malfunction and blow up, I don't know exactly how they work, then, you know, you're talking about serious damage to a person. So yeah, I think the EFL have done the right thing by, and the Premier League have done the right thing by making this notice, but it's actually the people enforcing it that are there. You know, it's hard for stewards, yes, but it's the policing of it that's going to be the key, because ultimately the Premier League, the EFL, the FA, whoever it's going to be, aren't going to be stationed at those grounds to make sure it happens.
On a more joyous note then, domestic football is back. We can look forward to another 10 months of Football League action. I'm just whipping through the Sky Bet Championship. New managers, John Eustace has stepped out from the assistant role at QPR to take over at Birmingham. John Dahl Thomason, joint all-time top scorer with Denmark, fresh off the back of successive Swedish titles with Malmo, has taken over at Blackburn Rovers. Michael Appleton has returned to Blackpool. He did have 2 months in charge there back in 2012. Vincent Kompany, off the back of his 2 years at Anderlecht, has taken over at Burnley. Michael Beale has stepped out from being Steven Gerrard's assistant at Rangers, then Aston Villa, to take over at QPR. And Rob Edwards, having got Forest Green Rovers promoted, has taken over at Watford. Any of those sort of stand out to you, Curtis? Any intriguing ones in there?
The intriguing one was Rob Edwards. I know Rob personally. He's a good guy. It was one, the way it happened. Obviously, it was a little bit difficult for Dale Vince because it was kind of...
It was difficult for Dale Vince. It happened when we were recording an official EFL podcast with Jammer.
So we were
actually in the middle with Jamil Matt of recording it when it all kind of happened. And it was only afterwards that the beggar said, oh, I did have a tiny hint of this, but I couldn't say anything because it hadn't been officially announced. I'm joking. Carry on.
No, but... Yeah, that was the interesting one, just because, you know, he'd done so well at Forest Green. I do know Rob personally, and like I say, he is a good guy. The way it happened at Forest Green wasn't the best way it could have been handled, but to go to Watford, a club that's just come down from the Premier League, I think he maybe saw it as an opportunity to fast-track himself to the Premier League, which, you know, having just had a season in League Two after being an England youth coach is... unbelievable, you know, so it's a great opportunity for him. The worrying thing is the Watford sack record. You know, they had, last time they were in a championship, they had Vladimir Ivic before, I think he maybe was in fifth place when he got the sack. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they got Cisco Munoz in, who obviously then took them up, yes. But then he was sacked after about 8 games in the Premier League. So I think that's always the worry in the back of a manager's head. Don't get me wrong, you're probably going to leave with a favourable severance package and then you'll still be able to get another job. But I thought it would more be the likes of a QPR or maybe a Blackburn or someone like that that was going to maybe try and get Rob's services. But obviously Watford have seen something in him, and yeah, I wish him all the best and hope it works out for him.
Mm. I mean, I quite like the spread of different backgrounds from those, like a John Eustace who's sort of cut his teeth with Kidderminster Harriers in the non-leagues, to obviously Vincent Kompany went a very different route. Michael Beale, I know, had, I think, 6 months as assistant manager of Sao Paulo in Brazil to sort of... There's a real sort of variation of different, well, listen, different characteristics of clubs, but very different recruitment approaches when it comes to the leader.
Yeah, I think if you go down the Birmingham route, just speaking about one of my old clubs, and they're a club that are trying to get a new owner and trying to get themselves sorted out. I honestly think that John Eustace was desperate to be a number one, and I think that he's stepped into a difficult situation, but he'll back himself to do well with the squad they've got. But also, because he was so desperate to be a number one, this was a job that presented itself. And I think, you know, being a Birmingham boy and being from the area, he's obviously not, it's well documented, he wasn't a Birmingham fan growing up, but he has a feel for what it means to the people that support the club. And he'll be able to at least... you know, try and give the fans what they need from his team. But I think it's just going to be an interesting season for Birmingham because, you know, will they lose players? Will this takeover happen? Will they be able to get players in? We don't know. That's going to be interesting. But also, I'm interested to see Vincent Kompany as well because, you know, it's one thing being the Manchester City legend that he is, going over to his old team and taking over the managerial role at a big club in Belgium. Coming to Burnley, there's big expectation, obviously, of going straight back up. So that's going to be interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how his model works in the Championship. Because as much as, like, listen, he's probably watched a lot of games here and there as a manager now, you know, your mind works differently. But in terms of actually managing in the Championship, it'll be a big ask. So it'll just be interesting to see how they start the season.
Yeah, with financial redress as well. Although I do know with the 25 million Burnley took for Chris Wood in January out of Newcastle, Nathan Collins has gone for 20 million to Wolves. Nick Pope's gone to Newcastle for 10 million. So that's 55 in the pot. But the old guard are moving out, aren't they? Tarkowski as well, leaving the club, Ben Mee. So be a period of readjustment. When I look at the sort of runners and riders in the division, it is the three that came down. It is Norwich, Watford and Burnley who are the favourites, tucked in behind them, West Brom, Sheffield United, Middlesbrough. Does that feel about right, about fair for the potential top six?
Yeah, I think you'd have to have said Sheffield United would be up there after, you know, narrowly missing out last year with in the playoffs in terms of the semi-finals. I think West Brom, after the start they had last season and then they fell away, and the squad they've got, you'd still expect them to have a good go. Obviously, I know Brucey well and his experience. You'd like to think they'll be able to put a team together that can mount a challenge this year more so than they did last year. And yeah, Middlesbrough with Wilder will obviously start the season with, again, another manager that's had a promotion or multiple promotions, and he'll find a way to do it. You know, Middlesbrough are always a well-backed club. They've just had some money in for Jed Spence, which means they'll be able to spend a bit of money, I guess, as well, and not worry about financial fair play. So yeah, I'm interested to see what they can do, because yeah, last season, as I said, they put us to the sword and looked like a very good team. So if they can have that kind of form this year, I don't see why they can't go up.
You're interested to see how Middlesbrough do. Perhaps somebody else in this conversation also is. At the other end of the scale, I did notice Rotherham, Paul Warner said, listen, we're just going to, obviously they've been a real boom bust club, promoted, relegated, etc. He just said, we're going to smile, show great enthusiasm and go for it. It's a big adjustment though, isn't it? You've got to praise a Paul Warne for his handling of this, that one minute you're fighting fires at the bottom end of the table and the next minute you've got the intense pressure to bounce straight back. Culturally, that must be such a juggling act for somebody like Paul.
Yeah, how they do it every year in terms of, it has been the last few years where they've been up, down, up, down. It must be so difficult, but, you know, there should be a time when it comes that, you know, they either back him and give him a few more players and give him more of a chance to stay in the league. Or, you know, maybe he turns his head, but that's not for me to say. But I think with Rotherham, they have a way of playing. They're an effective way of playing and they all give everything for him. So I feel like him as a person, I don't know him personally. I've obviously met him, yes, but I think they all pull in the right direction because of him. So I think that gives them that extra little edge that if it's not quality, then they've got that togetherness. They've got that fighting spirit for one another that will give them that extra edge to try and stay up this year.
Hasn't been a summer of outstanding, I don't think, EFL sort of transfer activity. But the one that did sort of go ping to me was Dwight Gayle going to Stoke. If they get him back in track, that could make a heck of a difference, could it not, for Michael O'Neill?
Yeah, Dwight Gayle's a top player. Very good finisher, natural finisher. I think last time he was at his level, I think he scored 20 goals or something, 20-odd goals for West Brom.
Yeah, him and Jay Rodriguez in tandem, yeah, weren't they?
Exactly. So he knows where Lennon is. He's a player that I think even, I'm surprised Premier League teams didn't think of just having a little punt at him, just to, even if he's a player that was going to come off the bench, because he's that natural in terms of in front of goal. When he gets a chance, he just finds a way. And, you know, he works really hard in terms of runs around, doesn't give you an easy time. But when you've got someone like that that's still got the quality to put the ball in the back of the net, it's going to be some difficult afternoons for some people. And I think it's a big signing for Stoke, because, you know, I think they've got it wrong a lot of times. They've spent big money to get someone in of a name and it's not really worked out. Whereas I think Dwight is, you know, proven at this level and I think he'll do really well for them.
I must just mention as well, you know, football clubs have fingers in a lot of pies. Despite, obviously, their struggles last season, Reading have paid a little bit of attention to far more important issues than just football. Their new home kit is a climate change design and its sleeve will have a stripe to represent a year's average temperature every year since the club was founded in 1871. I mean, the sleeve, I don't know if you've seen it, Curtis, it actually looks like your telly's broken and you've just got all the little stripes across. But actually, it just goes to show that football clubs do have a sense of wider issues going on. You alluded to it earlier, the huge temperatures you had to train through last week. It's just another example of football clubs doing their bit, raise public consciousness of the need for us all to get our acts together before we ruin the planet for future generations.
It is, yeah. And like you say, it might be because I haven't seen the kit. So it would have just been the question. If I'd seen the kit, I would have been probably saying, oh, that's a rascal. What's this all about? And then you get the story. So at least it is raising awareness, be it through, you know, through people wondering why have they got that kit or what it is, or the actual message that the club themselves are sending out. So yeah, fair play, because ultimately, you know, it is a big thing we speak about in football. We speak about, you know, racism, sexism, all these other kind of things. But, you know, when it comes to the planet and the thing that we all live in, it's just as important to get the messages across as well.
Sky Bet League One, which of course you are participating in this season, then another 7 new managers. Michael Duff's left Cheltenham Town to go to Barnsley. Ben Garner has left Swindon to go to Charlton Athletic. Wade Elliott has stepped up to take over at Cheltenham. Obviously, Liam Rossini, as you know, at your club. Scott Brown going to Fleetwood's a really interesting one, isn't it? 14 years, 22 trophies at Celtic, but taking over at Fleetwood. Ian Birchnell has left Notts County to take over from Rob Edwards at Forest Green Rovers. You might remember he was Graham Potter's successor at Östersund in Norway. And Mark Kennedy, the former Ireland winger, has taken over at Lincoln. Scott Brown, I mean, you've got to hand it to Fleetwood. They have picked some managers over the years and they do give opportunities.
I think Fleetwood must just like controversial, tough-tackling midfielders.
I don't know who you're referring to.
Yeah, there was a guy called Joseph Barton. It's a really interesting one. I think fair play to him because he obviously was doing his apprenticeship, shall we say, at Aberdeen as a player coach, and then he stepped away from that role. But he's obviously been doing the hard work and been putting himself into interviews and into interview processes, and he's got that job. So fair play. I'm interested to see how his team plays and how he goes about things. But yeah, it's a great opportunity for him to walk straight off the playing field and into a managerial role.
Definitely is. So you are in the mix at the top with the runners and riders at the top of League One, along with Sheffield Wednesday. We mentioned Rotherham. They have nicked Michael Ahikwe and Michael Smith from Rotherham. Sheffield Wednesday have also signed David Stockdale and Will Vaux. Very fancied, having missed out in the playoffs last time around. Ipswich 2 under Kieran McKenna. You guys. And then tucked in behind you 3, Peterborough, MK Dons, Bolton, Portsmouth. Does that sound about right to you, do you think? Are you backing yourselves? It's promotion. Oh, I don't want to use the phrase promotion or bust for you guys after what you've been through, but you know what I'm saying.
In terms of the squad we've got on paper, I would be lying if promotion wasn't our target. You know, I can sit here and say, oh, in terms of the club as a whole, yes, we need to stabilise and things like that. But knowing the players that we've signed, if I wasn't aiming for promotion, I'd be a liar and I'd be cheating myself. So yes, promotion is 100% a target. The difference is getting paper onto pitch. We have got a great team on paper, but getting it onto the pitch, making sure we're doing the right things, making sure we're all working in the right way. There's other variables like going to an Accrington or going to a Fleetwood on a cold Tuesday night. How do we react to that? You know, so there's different things that come into play when you're in League One. And I'm just hoping that as a group, we've got the minerals, we've got the ability, we've got the togetherness to see us through games. And that's not always playing well. That's getting through games, getting the win, going back home. And I think that's what this level's about. Sometimes you don't always have to be brilliant. It's just about making sure you get over the line each game, go on unbeaten runs and get momentum because, you know, for us this year, it's going to be a big task in terms of, I don't imagine a lot of teams are going to be coming to Pride Park and opening up and letting us play our football against them. So how are we going to be when teams come and we're now the big dog rather than the team that are at the bottom of the league? How's that going to react? So it's a different challenge for us altogether. So it's not as easy as what's on paper, but we'll give ourselves a good chance.
And when I look in Skybet League 2, then Curtis, again, six new managers. Johnny Jackson has moved from Charlton to Wimbledon. Pete Wilder's moved from Halifax to Barrow. Kevin Betsy's an interesting one, coming in from England and Arsenal development squads to take over at Crawley. Paul Hartley, five promotions in 11 seasons up in Scotland, has taken over at Hartlepool. Neil Wood has moved from Manchester United development squads to take over at Salford. And Scott Lindsay steps up to his first senior management role with Swindon Town. Kevin Betsy, you come across Kevin much at all in your travels?
I think I've played against Kevin Betsy years ago. Yeah, so I don't know him personally, no, but I've come across him a few times. So that's an interesting one. Another young manager getting an opportunity rather than, you know, the usual managerial merry-go-round.
And then when I look at the runners and riders at the top of Skybet League 2, Stockport, overwhelming favourites back in the EFL after an 11-year absence. Bradford in the mix, Salford up there, and two that kind of missed out on promotion quite dramatically. Northampton in the dying seconds of the regular season, losing out to Bristol Rovers, and Mansfield are lost in the playoff final. Swindon too, I guess, will be in the mix there as well. It's going to be an interesting season, isn't it, down there?
Yeah, it will be. You know, just some big clubs in terms of, obviously Bradford have been in the Premier League, but a few clubs that have been Championship level not too many years ago and stuff like that. So it will be interesting. I'd like to see Leighton Orient have a good go at it. When Richie Ellens came in back in the last season, he put together a good run and some good form. So I'm hoping he can get the club going and they can get up to League One, because that's my club, as we know. So I'm going to be a bit biased. But yeah, it's an interesting league. And like I say, the fact that Stockport, having just come out of the National League, are installed as favourites, shows what happens at that league. You know, back-to-back promotions aren't crazy. So I'm interested to see just how well Stockport start, because, you know, they were brilliant in the National League, but back in the league, it's a little bit more difficult. And will it be as easy as the bookmakers are making out?
I'm interested to see how the old-timers' legs hold up. You're feeling good. You're ready to go. You're raring.
Raring and ready to go. Yeah, can't wait.
Loving talking to you. Good luck. Enjoy. Catch you later, Curtis.
Cheers. Thank you.
That is it for this first episode of the new season. We are about to get underway. A big, big thank you to Curtis Davis. If you've enjoyed listening, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.